This is Wednesday, July 16, 2025. We are in Natick, Massachusetts, and this tape is part of the Morse Institute Library's continuing Veterans Oral History Project. My name is Maureen Sullivan, and we are privileged to have with us today Dr. Michael Baretti, Jr. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you very much.
May I ask when you were born?
October 20th, 1972.
And where were you born?
Bronx, New York.
What community do you currently live in?
Westboro, Massachusetts.
Your marital status?
Married.
And do you have children?
Three children.
Now, I understand you didn't live too long in the Bronx.
No, just about a year before my family relocated.
And you relocated to Westboro?
Yes.
Tell us about growing up in Westboro.
It was a lot different than it is today. It was a two-horse town, so to speak. A lot of farms, a lot of pastures, not a lot of traffic. The old farm, the old speedway, the airport was there at one time. It was a great place to grow up.
Mm-hmm. And what did your parents do for a living?
My mother was a medical secretary, and my father was in healthcare administration.
Okay. And I understand your dad was also a veteran.
Yes.
You know that because he interviewed for this project about 6 months ago.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah. And you went to Westboro High School?
I did, yes.
Mm-hmm. And what year did you graduate?
1990.
What did you do after that?
I took a couple of years off. I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do with myself. A friend and I had moved to West Palm Beach, Florida for a couple of years before I kind of realized that I wanted to be back in school. And attended college at that point.
And what college did you attend?
I started out at Quinsigamond Community College in Worcester. I studied radiologic technology. I was an X-ray tech.
How'd you like that?
I liked it. It was great. It was a good job. It was the right time. It was the right thing. Kind of got my feet wet back into college. Transferred from there to the University of Miami and finished up my pre-med degree. I took a couple of years off after that again and worked in clinical research at UMass here in Worcester before I applied to medical school.
Mm-hmm. And when did you start considering the military?
When I had to figure out a way to pay for medical school.
That would do it.
Yes.
So when did you enter the military?
1999 through the Naval Health Professions Scholarship Program.
And why the Navy?
To be honest, I missed the Air Force deadline. So the Army, the Air Force, and the Navy offer scholarships for medical school. I was planning on the Air Force, missed the application deadline. The Navy was the next one up. And made that deadline, which worked out perfectly. My father laughed his butt off.
So what was the name of the scholarship again?
Health Professions Scholarship Program.
Okay. So once you were accepted into the Navy, and I trust you got the scholarship.
Yes.
Yes. Were you told to go to basic or go to school?
So you have to attend officer indoctrination school, or officer candidate school is the kind of the lay term for it. We were given the option to do it before medical school or between the first and second year. I did it right before starting medical school.
Mm-hmm. And where were you sent?
Newport, Rhode Island.
What was that like?
Well, it's Newport, Rhode Island. It was great. it was good. I'll be honest with you, it's a little bit watered down. It's not basic training. It is not full officer candidate school. It is for people entering as healthcare professionals and some other allied services. There's a lot of getting yelled at. There's a lot of exercise, the same as any, you know, entrance into the military. But I'm under no illusions that I went through full basic.
Mm-hmm. And how long was the training?
I believe it was 6 weeks.
Okay. And during this period, were you, I know you mentioned basic, but what was some of the parts of the program?
So it was, you know, learning how to be in the military, learning how to be an officer. We actually were sworn in as officers prior to starting this program. So you enter as an O-1, or depending on what, you know, job or where you are in your education, some people entered as high as O-3. There was learning how to wear the uniform, learning what the ranks are, learning about the military, a lot of exercise, good amount of discipline, and then there was the last 2 weeks was the basic officer leadership course.
And what did that entail?
A lot of classroom work, a lot of understanding how to be a naval officer and how to be a leader of troops.
End of the 6 weeks, I trust you're now an ensign?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly.
So what happened next?
So then you go to medical school. I spent the next 4 years attending a civilian medical school in Vallejo, California, paid for, luckily, by the Navy. There was really no military active duty time in the first couple of years. In the third and fourth year, I was able to do rotations as part of our military, or part of medical training at a military medical facility. My third year, I spent a month at Tripler Army Medical Center in Hawaii. And my fourth year, I spent a month at Bethesda Naval Hospital.
Pretty good places.
It was great. Yeah, it was a great experience.
So you mentioned your background in as an X-ray technician.
Mm-hmm.
Was there any other specialties that you tried out while you were in medical school?
So I had aspirations of becoming a radiologist because of my history as an X-ray tech. However, the Navy thought otherwise of that. They really don't tell you what specialty you're going to do, but there are needs of the Navy. And they say if you want to do something like radiology and we don't need them, you're going to serve your time as a general medical officer, and then you can go back after your four-year active duty commitment and do your training in whatever specialty you'd like. So it was kind of a roundabout way, the way I landed in internal medicine. I finished the 4 years of medical school, a little couple of nuances on what the Navy actually needed that year. At the last minute, I found out they did need radiologists, but was too late to actually secure a residency spot in radiology. So I landed in a one-year internship in internal medicine, again, back here at UMass in Worcester. After that year, the Navy detailer called me and said, you're going to have to come in for a general medical tour. We need general medical officers next year. This was 2004, so really the height of the Iraq War, or the height of the Afghanistan War, beginning of the Iraq War. And I said, okay, I expected it. You know, I'd do my 4 years and then get out and do radiology, hopefully. He said, where do you want to go for your first tour? And I said, well, I'll make it easy for you. Stick me on any ship anywhere in the world. And he said, how about the 2nd Marine Division, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina? And I said, I don't think so. I said, how about any ship anywhere in the world? And he said, oh, okay, then. How about the 2nd Marine Division, Camp Lejeune, North Carolina? So I realized didn't have much of a choice. So finished my internship and sent off to North Carolina, where then you attend another school, which was Field Medical Service School. So you learn, now that you know how to be a physician, now you learn how to be a Marine physician. So a lot of field work, how to set up a field hospital, how pre-hospital field trauma medicine works from a general medical officer standpoint, how to wear a Marine uniform, how to function in the Marine Corps environment. And then when that was done, they assign you to your battalion. My first battalion was an artillery unit, 510. Artillery units are pretty boring for the physicians. You're in the rear, hanging out, doing sick call. You're on the battalion CO's special staff as medical advisory, but not a lot happens in artillery battalions. You're usually back in the rear. At this time, that artillery battalion was breaking up and becoming augmented infantry for other units that were deploying to Iraq. So I spent a few months in artillery. I got moved to regiment temporarily when they couldn't figure out what to do with me, and then sent over to infantry after that. So I ended up at 1st Battalion, 2nd Marines, Infantry Regiment, as the battalion surgeon. I had a junior medical officer with me as well. We had 70 corpsmen, and we immediately started training up for deployment. So about a six-month pre-deployment training. As the medical officer, we did a lot of really good trauma training. Some of the physicians in the division went out to LA County Hospital for some trauma training. I didn't get to do that. That didn't work with my schedule. We did operational emergency medicine skills, which was a very, very high level, hardcore combat trauma training. We did combat casualty care course in San Antonio, Texas. Just really all over the place. ACLS certification during that time. And then we started the pre-deployment workup as being part of the 22nd Marine Expeditionary Unit. So a Marine Expeditionary Unit is a combination of a battalion, which pluses to a battalion landing team, including artillery, light armored reconnaissance, recon, tanks, and then you're matched with a air squadron, and then you have a service support element, and you deploy with the MEU command on what was supposed to be a traditional med cruise, where it's a forces in reserve, a bunch of ships pre-staged with these troops in the Mediterranean in that vicinity. But everyone knew the second we got on the boats, we were going straight to Iraq, which is what we did. So we got on the boats in maybe October, November 2005, sailed across the Atlantic, had a Liberty port on the way over in Rota, Spain, refuel, get some, you know, stretch your legs a little bit for a couple of days, get back on the boats through the Mediterranean, through the Suez Canal. And then as we got around the Suez Canal, around the port, Oman and Yemen area, the bottom of the Arabian Peninsula, our unit got pulled to do anti-piracy operations. So that was one of the times when the Somali pirates that we heard so much about were very, very active in that region, attacking ships, hostages. It was right before, or a couple of years before, the Captain Phillips incident, but in that same genre. So we were floating around there for a little bit. One of our ships got in a scuffle with some Somali pirates. A little battle ensued, and the injured Somali pirates were all, the ones that were left alive, were all flown over to the ship that I was on, which was the big deck with most medical facilities. So the first casualties I got to treat were Somali pirates.
Wow.
Yeah. So from there, up through the Persian Gulf into Kuwait, landed at Kuwait Naval Base in November 2005, get my years right, staged in Kuwait, flew up to Al-Asad Air Base in northern Iraq, staged again at Al-Asad, got our gear ready, and then went out to our area of operations, which was just outside Ramadi in the Anbar province. It was a city called Al-Hit, which was just up the Euphrates River, Baghdad, Fallujah, Ramadi, Al-Hit. Very active area at that time. A lot of insurgents coming over from Syria across that desert, usually landed in Al-Hit before they spread out to the rest of the country. And we were taking over for another unit that had taken the city. And then we took over from them and tried to stabilize things.
Boy, were you kept busy.
We were kept busy, yes. The unit was broken up into five forward operating bases around the city. I was at one of them that was the casualty collection point. It was an old train station that had been blown out earlier in the war. None of the trains obviously were running. There was no railway at that time. This is late 2005 at the height of the war. So we had about 150, 200 Marines and some Iraqi army that was co-located with us on that base. I had about 15 or 20 of my medics or Navy corpsmen with me. We had almost no electricity. We had one generator that we had a line coming off of. We did most of our work with headlamps and flashlights in a very unsterile, hasty environment. casualties came in. Sometimes we went out on patrol. It was busy. A lot of your time is downtime, as everyone will tell you about deployment. You know, 80-90% of your time, you're playing cards and you know, hanging out and trying to fill the hours. And then the other 10-20% of the time gets very hectic very quickly.
So when you were on patrol, you were wearing the full Magilla, the uniform.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Armor. Yeah. Did you have like the little Red Cross on your helmet or?
No, that's usually a Target, I think.
Yeah,
not a lot of
is.
Places respect that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Iraqi insurgency read the Geneva Convention.
Mm-hmm. So. By the way, what was your rank at the time?
I was an O3, so I was a Navy lieutenant.
Okay.
You know, the doc is not supposed to be out in the front. Mm-hmm. I found myself there a couple of times by just inadvertent acts, and you know. Mm-hmm. It just, there is really no front in that war. It was wherever it shows up, whatever roadside bomb hits or wherever the action mm-hmm. pops up, you just hope you're not there, I'll be honest with you. But there was one time when we had a quick reaction force staged on our base. I'm sure you know what that is. And when a unit gets in trouble in the city, they can call for a quick reaction force. These vehicles are all staged. Everyone who's supposed to be on them knows, and you know, 30 seconds or whatever, they're in the trucks and they're out the door and going to help wherever unit is, you know, pinned down. And they called the quick reaction force one time, and it was the first time they called it, and I just grabbed my helmet and grabbed my flak jacket and my weapon, and I jumped on the truck. Except I'm not part of the quick reaction force. So it was supposed to be two of my corpsmen. One of them was on the truck, the other one might have been in the burn barrels or in the head or something, and he never made it onto the truck. And the other corpsman looked at me and said, "Sir, what are you doing here?" And I said, "I don't know." And at that point, it was too late. We were already moving. So we drove out into the city, and now I got time to think about it. Now it's, you know, 5 minutes of, what did I just do? This is really, really dumb. And we drove into a pretty nasty firefight, actually. The convoy that was out in the city got pinned down with an IED. Everyone dismounted. A second IED went off and dropped five guys. And then the ambush happened from both sides of the road. Mm-hmm. So now the convoy's pinned down. We're at the other end of the road, stopped behind some disabled vehicle, and we got out of the trucks and just ran towards where the wounded were being collected, and ran about probably 100-150 yards through this firefight. And when you're running that far with all that weight on your back, I wasn't as conditioned as I should have been. I remember having to stop in the road to catch my breath. And I just remember seeing the Marines on either side of the road just standing up, returning fire, just fearless. It was fantastic. Mm-hmm. It was really impressive. My corpsman that was running with me took a round through the back of the leg. Didn't even feel it when it happened. He noticed it when we got to the other end of the sprint that he was bleeding out of the back of his leg. We got to the high back Humvee where one of the original corpsmen in the pinned down convoy was collecting some of the casualties. Interesting story on this kid. He was a 21-year-old E3, E4, second deployment to Iraq. During this firefight, he had saved four Marines and a translator that all were injured by dragging them back one at a time over 100 yards each way, collecting them in this high-back Humvee. Then he went out and personally got three insurgents. Got a Silver Star for that action. Mm. It was incredible. Yeah, it was a nasty day. So all the wounded were collected at our truck. We got back there, and at some point the light armored reconnaissance vehicle just came and laid waste to the street, and that was the end of it. So turned around, got in the trucks, went home. So that was that was the day I should not have been out there. Mm-hmm. It was dumb. I don't know what I was thinking. All I was thinking was, oh my God, something's happening, go. And when I got back, my chief petty officer grabbed me by the scruff of the neck and shook me silly and said, "Sir, don't ever do something that stupid again."
And I hope you did.
I did not.
So how long were you deployed in Iraq?
It was a 6-month deployment. We spent, I want to say, 4 months of it in country. The rest of it was on ship to and from. We left Iraq back to Kuwait. And before we got back on the ships, they said, things got really hot again. You're going to get on the ships, you know, stash your gear, get it back up, get some rest, and we're going back up to Baghdad. We ended up not going back to Baghdad. We stayed in Kuwait for 3 weeks training, and what they thought was going to become a really nasty situation calmed down. So trained 3 weeks in the desert. Very interesting, Kuwait. It was really that bleak kind of movie or TV desert that you see where the sun is just bleaches everything out, and it's 100 degrees in the shade, and you know, it was a really interesting time, but it was fun. It was a good 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Back on the ships, sailed back over another Liberty port in Palma, Mallorca. Couldn't complain. It was a nice decompression time. And then back home. I think we made it back home in June or July of 2006.
And where was home?
Well, it was back to North Carolina, okay, to Camp Lejeune. Mm-hmm. And then I decided, that was after, so I did 2 years of my 4-year commitment. And then I applied for a deferment to leave the Navy again and go back to residency to finish my specialty training. I was granted another deferment. So left active duty, went back to UMass as a civilian, finished 2 more years in internal medicine residency. And then still had 2 more years to serve. So I was assigned to Naval Hospital Jacksonville, Florida this time. NAS is an air station with a very large naval hospital, third largest naval hospital in the country. Spent 2 years there doing internal medicine. Wasn't really the best career time in my life. Primary care is a frustrating job. Mm-hmm. So my CO walked in my office one day and he said, "Hey, sir, you know, Lieutenant Peretti, I'm sorry, you're going to be deploying again." And I said, "Oh, thank God." I said, "Okay, get me out of here. Send me back to Iraq. Send me to Afghanistan." He said, "No, this time you're going out on the Comfort." So Comfort is a hospital ship. The Navy has 2 very large hospital ships, the Comfort and the Mercy. Comfort on the East Coast, Mercy on the West Coast, and they alternate every year doing humanitarian medical missions. So we spent 5 months doing 6 different countries in Central and South America. Yeah. Interesting time. Haiti, Dominican Republic, Colombia, Antigua, Panama, Nicaragua, El Salvador, I think is all the countries that we hit during that time.
And this was about, what, 2006?
2009. Okay. Yes. So, interesting mm-hmm. deployment. A lot of places that have never seen Western doctors before, or I should say first world American doctors. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of good stuff. It was heartbreaking in a lot of ways. A lot of compassion fatigue. A lot of people you just couldn't help the way you wanted to.
What kind of care did you provide?
So we had medical, surgical, optometry, dental, really everything. It was soup to nuts in every country what you could do, but there are some things that aren't fixed in 2 weeks or 3 weeks in one place. We also had veterinary services with us, where sometimes the most care you can offer people is by taking care of their livestock. So we had Army veterinarians with us. As internal medicine doctors, it's tough. I mean, I can go there and tell you, you've got high blood pressure, you've got diabetes, you have this infection. If it's not something I can fix with 2 weeks of medications, mm-hmm. we're in trouble. You know, I can give you a few months of high blood pressure medicines or take care of your diabetes for a little bit, but when we leave, you're back to square one. So it's a little frustrating in that regard. Mm-hmm. The surgeons did a great job. They can do the cleft palates, they can do the orthopedic injuries and things that really make a difference. The optometrists were huge. You know, give someone a pair of glasses who couldn't see, and they're really grateful. And the dentist did a great job.
Mm-hmm. And how long was this particular deployment?
I think it was 5 months door to door.
And I know you mentioned Haiti. And I
yes.
think that was maybe just before that big hurricane.
It was before the earthquake.
The earthquake,
yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I Haiti's a heartbreaking place. Mm-hmm. It was so bad that when I heard that the earthquake hit, I said, I can't imagine it got any worse. Mm-hmm. You know, it really, it's they have years to go before they can even be a developing nation, unfortunately. Yeah. It was heartbreaking.
Yeah. So, and you also went to Colombia?
Yes. So Haiti, Dominican Republic, Antigua. Antigua is a very wealthy island. I think it was more of a political stop because the Chinese had been lobbying for them, you know, for the presence at Antigua as well. So we spent some time in Antigua and, you know, did our thing. But that was more of a, I think, more of a liberty port than anything. Colombia was a very poor area. Tumaco, Colombia, which is the cocaine exporting capital of the country, right off the Andes. The rivers come out of the mountains and go into the oceans. Those semi-submersible submarines that the Coast Guard always picks up, packed with cocaine, come out of there. Nicaragua, El Salvador, very underdeveloped, obviously, underdeveloped medical care. So it's exhausting. I mean, you realize how privileged we are. Mm-hmm. I'll say that.
So what happened after that deployment?
So after that, that was the end of my active duty obligation. And I was planning on coming back to do pulmonary and critical care fellowship, so more education. The Navy had offered me a spot in San Diego to stay on active duty and do pulmonary critical care there. And I said, no, thank you. I'm going to go back to UMass. They've offered me a spot as well. And within a week before, I hadn't finished yet. I was in the last month of my time there. My CO came in again and said, you've been name selected for another deployment. And I said, what do you mean name selected? He goes, your name came across specifically for a year in Afghanistan. And I said, I can't. I said, I have a fellowship waiting for me. If I don't get there, I'm going to lose the fellowship. And then these are really not easy to come by. So it took a whole bunch of calls, and I'm still not sure how I got name selected. Mm-hmm. I have my theory that it had to do with turning down the fellowship spot in San Diego. But I finally got a hold of the nationwide detailer who said, you know, no, this doesn't make sense. You're right. He goes, I have other people who've never deployed before. So I was off the hook for that deployment, got out of active duty, and came home. Did a 3-year fellowship in pulmonary critical care medicine at UMass. Joined the reserves during that time, so I re-entered the Navy on reserve out of a unit in Newport, Rhode Island again.
And you have any stories about that part of your naval career out of Newport?
So, you know, it was good. I really enjoyed it. It was, you know, 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year. The reserves are great. I think it was a tough transition for me coming off active duty and going to the reserves. I didn't get it at first. It's not really the same military in a lot of ways. They train just as hard. They're just as, you know, dedicated. But the administration is different. When you're on active duty, there's a lot of support for the troops. You know, if you need something done, you go to the Pommy shop to get your orders, or here or there, and there's someone there to help you. In the reserves, it's kind of all on you. And I didn't understand that. So I didn't quite know how to run my own career as a reservist. I had to learn as I went, and it was difficult. The work was fantastic. I mean, I enjoyed the weekends down there. The 2 weeks a year, I was asked to do training for junior physicians and corpsmen up at Fort Drum, New York, which is all the way, yeah, exactly. You almost speak in French up there. in fact, there's a saying that if hell ever freezes over, it's going to look like Fort Drum. So we did a combined service Army-Navy, Air Force combat trauma course up in Fort Drum. We did that a couple weeks a year every year. And I went first as a student and then became an instructor there, which was great. It was really, there were very few people left in the service at that time. This is somewhere around 2013, 2014. Very few people that stayed in with any combat trauma experience. And I think the people that did all went into teaching in the military. So it was really, it was a good experience. I was at one of my reserve weekends in Newport, and one of my fellow physicians said to me, he said, how many points do you have to retirement at this point? We were talking about our careers. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. What are points? I said, I thought it was just, you know, 20 years. He goes, no. He said, reserves is different. It's not time. It's how many points. You get points for your weekends, points for your 2 weeks a year, additional schools you attend or whatever. And I said, well, how do I find this out? And he said, you have to log on to the website. I said, what website? What are you talking about? So he's telling me which website to log on to. Enter my social. It's not recognized. I said, okay. He said, try an R at the end of it. Sometimes reserve does that. That's not recognized either. So now I got to go to the admin shop, which is just a few people on the reserve side, and I get some 19-year-old E3. I tell him, hey, you know, this website's not recognizing my social. He said, sir, I got it. I'll take care of it. And he's looking it up, and he says, no, you're right. I can't find it. He goes, let me get my chief. The chief came over and said, I'll fix this, sir. And he couldn't figure it out. So then I get the lieutenant at the admin shop, and he couldn't figure it out either. And he said, you have to call BUPERS, the Bureau of Personnel in Millsville, Tennessee, I think it is. And I said, okay. So I finally got a hold of some civilian in Tennessee. And she said, you're not recognized in the system as being part of the military. And I said, well, I'm getting orders. I'm getting paid. I'm getting promoted. I was in 05 at this point, I think. So I'd been promoted through lieutenant commander and then to full commander. And I said, well, I'm getting paid, promoted, and getting orders. She said, no, that's the other side of the house. That's Washington. She said, but your record of your entire career here is not recognized. She said, do you have hard copies of everything? Well, I said, it's 2017, 2018 now. I said, you're talking about the last 20 years from 99 when I entered. I said, maybe. She said, can you send me that? And I said, no. I said, I'm not going to dig up 18, 19 years of records and send them to you. I said, somewhere in your office is a guy with very thick rimmed glasses and a pocket protector who can hit a button and make this happen. So I said, okay, that being said, what's my commitment, you know, on your end, your visibility? And she said, you don't have a commitment. I said, can you just put that in writing for me? So she put it in writing for me, and I resigned. I sent a resignation. To get a retirement for me at that point would have been repopulating my entire career through hard copy and still probably another 8 or 9 years on reserves. And at this point, we had had 3 kids that were young, and I was working a couple weekends at my civilian job in addition to the weekend a month reserves. And I said, this isn't going to work with the family anymore. So I resigned in, I think it was 2018.
And you did get out as a commander.
I did, yes. Oh, postscript to that story.
Postscript.
A few years later, my father and I were at the Marine Corps birthday luncheon in Boston. And I was talking to an admiral who was there. And we were chatting about my career, and I told him that story. And he said, oh, I know exactly what happened to you. And I said, well, that would be interesting, sir. I said, what happened? He said, well, all the hard copies of records were kept in a warehouse in New Orleans, Louisiana. He said, and when the hurricane hit, we lost 10 to 15% of the military's records to the flood. And I said, why didn't they tell anybody? He goes, who are we going to tell? We didn't know who we lost. We just lost 10 to 15%, and we were hoping people would tell us. So I was apparently one of those before they moved to Millington, Tennessee. That's where it was. So that was the end of my Navy career, apparently, the New Orleans flood.
As of Katrina.
Katrina, exactly, yes.
So, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and that's how my career, unfortunately, fizzled out with the Navy.
Oh, dear.
No, it was honestly, it was time. It was time for me to resign. It was a great career. It was more experiences than I ever could hope to have had. Mm-hmm. I tell everyone it's the best experience I never wanted. And I learned a lot, and it really shaped me. But it was time to end.
Okay. Yeah. So did you receive any awards or citations?
You know, my active duty years in the Marines were great. I had a CO who was very hardcore and did not believe in giving people awards for doing their job. So I think I did everything right. I earned his respect. I stayed in touch with him for years after. But I received Combat Action Ribbon for my time there, the firefight that I found myself in. Our unit was awarded the Presidential Unit Citation, National Defense Service, Iraqi Campaign Medal, that kind of stuff. But yeah, that's where it ended.
So even though you have resigned from the Navy, you have continued your career in medicine.
Yes.
And what are you doing now?
Director of the intensive care unit at St. Luke's Hospital in New Bedford.
What's that like?
Slightly less dangerous than Iraq. Depends on the day, though. New Bedford can be a tough town. But it's a great hospital system. I have a great intensive care unit. I have a good staff, great physicians, great nurses. So it's a challenging environment. It's an underserved city in Massachusetts. A lot of medical illiteracy, unfortunately. People that don't follow with doctors regularly. Unfortunately, a lot of substance abuse. And we see every bit of it.
And have you been able to join a service organization such as the Legion or the VFW?
I have not. You know, I really do identify with my time, but have not really made that leap yet. I keep in touch with some people that I served with, but that's really where it ends. I haven't joined an organization to this point.
And your three children?
Three children, 15, 13, and 12.
And have they, any of them, expressed any interest in joining the military?
They joke about it. They've talked about it. I think they're still young. They don't think they know quite what that means at this point. They know that I did it. They've heard some of the stories. If they did, fantastic. If they didn't, I'm not going to force them to. But it was a great way to pay for my education, and it was a great way to learn life lessons that would not have been learned otherwise.
I was just about to ask, how important was it for you to serve in the military? You just answered it.
Very important. I think that it really, I mean, I grew up under the heavy hand of my father, the Marine, a retired Marine major. He was fantastic, but it's, they can only teach you so much. Going through it really brought it home.
Okay. Is there anything else you would like to say? Are there any stories that come to mind?
I mean, there's a lot of stories, but how many of them are appropriate? No, you know, I had a lot of great characters that I was able to interact with. My executive officer in the Marines, a gentleman by the name of Major Bell, Major Douglas Bell, was a great influence on me. He was a no-nonsense, very hard-nosed Marine in every sense of the word, and I swore that he was put on this earth to harass me during my time under him. And he made my life hell every day I was there, and I loved it. And when I was done, we kept in touch for years after as well. He was a really great mentor in a lot of ways. There were times that we would disagree on topics. In the pre-deployment phase, before we go to Iraq, we would have a weekly meeting. Myself as the battalion surgeon, the JAG officer, who was the legal advisor to the battalion, and the XO, and we'd go through our med legal brief, where he would, the JAG officer, present all the Marines that were not going to be able to deploy because of legal reasons, and they would go one at a time. Okay, this guy's going, you know, he's got a trial for this. This guy's going to jail for that. And okay, they're off the list. They're off the list. And then he goes to me. He goes, Doc, what do you got? I said, sir, I got a guy with a, you know, broken femur. He's going to require 6 weeks of rehab. He's like, well, he can do it on the ship on the way over. He's going. Okay, I got this guy who's being worked up for a blood cancer, you know. Nope, he can do it when you get back, you know, he's going too. So after about the 10th person that he rejected, I looked at him and I said, sir, I'm going to get you your own honorary medical degree and I'm going to stop coming to these meetings. And he just looked at me and said, you're on thin ice, Doc. which was the least colorful thing I think he ever said to me. I think he told me one time I was going to be reduced to checking the crap levels in the port-a-johns, so to speak. So yeah, it was, we had that kind of a relationship. But on the back end of the deployment, when we got home, they had an officer's golf outing, which was kind of the blow off steam. All the officers get together, spend an afternoon at the golf course, do some funny awards and talking and speeches and whatnot. And the junior medical officer and I had printed up an honorary medical degree from Major Douglas Bell, and it was hysterical. Every time he referenced medicine, he said, oh, effing Navy medicine, and it was the University of effing Navy Medicine, honorary degree to Major Douglas Bell, and we had signed it and framed it for him, and to this day, I think he still has it on his wall. I finally got him his honorary medical degree.
Hopefully with the certain letters kind of redacted.
Yeah, no, they were all there.
Oh, boy. Doctor, is there anything else before we wrap things up?
No, I think that's a great way to end.
All right. Well, Dr. Michael Boretti, Jr., thank you so much
for
coming in to take part in the Natick Veterans Oral History Project.
This was wonderful. Thank you. Mm-hmm.